Hello, I'm Stephanie Gillard, the Producing Artistic Director at American Stage. Welcome to Spotlight, the American Stage podcast, where we illuminate the artistry and ideas behind the stories.
Hey there, I'm Sadie Lockhart, the Community Engagement Associate here at American Stage. Today's episode features a live recording of a panel discussion from our 21st Century Voices New Play Festival. The conversation, led by Associate Artistic Director Kristen Clifford, explores the process and innovation of new play development and introduces our audiences to the five playwrights whose pieces were a part of our 2020 New Play Festival.
So, to begin, we're going to start by making introductions of our playwrights. These are all five playwrights of this festival that you will be hearing their plays throughout the weekend. Extra applause for them. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves and their plays first, and then we're going to hear a little bit of background about these writers before we dive into some questions.
Thank you. My name is John Pavoso. I'm here from Washington, D.C., and my play is MLM is for Murder or Your Side Hustle is Killing Us.
Hi, I'm Taylor Lamb. I'm here from Baltimore, Maryland. My play is You Two, and it's tomorrow at 3. Nice plug.
What is your play, John?
Mine's tomorrow night.
Hi, I'm Jen Blackmer. I am the playwright of Predictor, which is being read on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and I hail from Muncie, Indiana.
I'm Hal Borden. My play is The Impossible Escape of Don Misterioso, which will be read tonight at 8, and I am here from Philadelphia.
Hey, everybody. I am Albedo Callender. My play is Strange Courtesies. It was read last night. Thank you. It was read last night. And I am the Artistic Director of African American Shakespeare Company, and I'm out of Oakland, California.
Excellent. So, Peter, why don't we start with you? We'll go back down the line. And just tell us a little bit about your background, and give us a little context into what brought you to playwriting.
Okay, for those of you, I've been a director here for the past 5 years. I've directed Jitney, Joe Turner's Come and Gone, Raisin in the Sun, Pipeline, and the last play that was just here, Skeleton Crew. As I said, I'm the artistic director of African American Shakespeare Company in San Francisco. I was invited here by Stephanie 5 years ago. It was one of the best phone calls I've ever gotten. As far as playwriting is concerned, it's my first play ever. I just outed myself. And it just came about because I loved the story and I loved the people of South Africa. All shades of the people of South Africa. I am enamored by how people can forgive after 46 years of apartheid. I'm just enamored by that. Sometimes I can't even forgive someone, you know, walking across the street in front of me when the light is green. It's my turn. So I have trouble forgiving that. But the fact that so many people can forgive so generously and be so gracious, that floored me, and I just wanted to read more about it. And the more I read about it, the more I thought this story needs to be told. And I'm very much into, we had a brunch this morning and talked about the things that move us as playwrights, as individuals, as humans. And I'm very interested in stories that are not told, things that we need to know about that we don't know. That's what interests me. And I want to do that with a little bit of humor as well. So that's my quick story.
After college, I went to film school to study screenwriting, which was my first serious attempt at writing. This was a number of years ago, so film school grads were not yet legally entitled to show on Netflix. So I went to law school, just in case. And a number of years later, I decided to try a stage play for the first time, and I had a wonderful experience with it. I think today, especially when so much of our entertainment and our lives is based on a screen, the experience of live theater is wonderful, and being able to participate in that has really kept me with playwriting for the past couple of years.
All of that. I've been writing since my mother said I started writing when I was two. I don't remember that, but you know, but it had always been a thing that I was. It was just a companion. It was just a thing that I did. And when I was in middle school, I got involved in theater for the first time. But I was going to be an astronomer. And on a whim, I actually decided to audition for a theater program, one theater program, when I went to college. And I wound up getting in, not realizing that I didn't want to be an actor as much as I wanted to be a storyteller. And so luckily during that time, I was able to have some experiences. I wrote this cute little one-act play that did okay. And then that gave me the fuel to write the world's worst play, because it was long and it was horrible and it was everything that I ever, every person that I ever wanted to get back in my life. I decided to like yell at all my ex-boyfriends and everything that was going on to me at the time. And that was a very difficult thing. So I decided at the same time I had taken a directing class. And so I actually embarked on a directing career, which took me to Chicago and, you know, doing storefront theater for a while, and then eventually my graduate program. And it was after my graduate program I realized that a lot of the stories that I was interested in telling as a director didn't exist yet. And so I kind of had some experiences, one experience in graduate school where I got to direct a play that I had written, and I thought, oh, this is okay, so I can do this. Now I'm a little bit older, a little bit more seasoned, I can do this. And when I started teaching, the reason why I'm in Muncie is because I teach at Ball State University, and it was when I started teaching there that I realized that I really am a playwright, and that the time I spent as a director was like a master class in scene structure that went on for about 10 years. So that's how I came back to writing.
Hi, again, I'm Taylor. By day, I am the communications manager at Baltimore Center Stage, and by night, I write plays, and I also produce a web series. As far as how I got here, I started writing when I was four, not plays. My first short story was called The Talking Cat. It was very good. And then I started acting in the fifth grade, just like, you know, elementary school theater. And I acted all throughout, up until, all through college. And I always knew it made sense for me to combine the writing and the acting, the writing and the theater, but I just never got around to it because I didn't know how. 2 years ago, I was in my last semester of school, I'm outing myself as a young person, and I was at University of Virginia, and I took playwriting in the fall, and then I just wrote a bunch of 10-minute plays. And then in the spring, I was tasked to write something longer, and that was my first play, longer than 10 pages, and that's this play. So I've been working on that one script for the last 2 years, and I'm really excited that it has come to this.
Yeah, so I also kind of came to a circuitous route to playwriting. I acted as a kid and as a high school student. I was not good, but I was a boy, so I got cast just by showing up. And so when I got to college, I kind of left that behind. Also went to grad school. After that, you know, didn't touch theater for quite a, you know, a few years. And then I actually started. I'm a freelance writer in DC, and one of the theater websites there was hiring freelance writers to review all the DC Fringe Festival shows each summer. And so they would take on a lot of additional, because there are, you know, 200 shows that needed to be reviewed in about 2 weeks. And I did that for a couple years and really, really enjoyed it, seeing a wide range of shows. And for whatever reason, I just woke up one day about 5 years ago and I was like, I want to try that. You know, I have no formal theater training, haven't even, no 101 level classes. I just sort of wrote my first play. I self-produced it in the Fringe Festival. It wasn't horrible. So, I wouldn't say it was good necessarily, but it wasn't horrible. And so I was like, well, I want to keep doing this theater thing. And I already have a couple degrees that I'm paying for the next 30 years. So don't want to go back to school. So kind of then, you know, fumbling my way through that, got hooked up with a theater company in DC, and, you know, have just sort of been writing as I go, and this is probably, I think, probably my third full-length show.
So I would love to pose to the group, and certainly, you know, if you want to answer, chime in. I'm curious to know, what is your favorite part of the writing process? Is it beginning when you're first got the idea and you're fleshing through the idea? Is it when you're doing rewrites and you have to go back and start refining? Or is it somewhere in the middle where you're kind of getting structure in line and things like that? So what is your favorite part of the writing process?
In the beginning, before you write anything, you've written the perfect play. It's beautiful. It is everything you ever wanted it to be. And then you actually have to sit down and do it. So it's not that that's my favorite part of the writing process, but that is a really cool thing.
Yes, I'm a golfer, and whenever I show up at my tea time, the person in the front desk says, "How are you doing?" And I say, "I'm even." And that's right, because right before you start, it's the best time ever. You're even. You're just, you know, it's life is great. For me, I think it's a research. I love finding out about things and finding out about people and what is said and what's recorded and how people talk. And then I really love putting a scene together. And what is the event of that scene? And I try to write something every single day. Whether it's, you know, I have no idea what to write today, I'm really tired and I really don't feel like writing, and I would write that 5 times. So I think most of my time is, I just love the research. And then once in a while, something would happen 2 o'clock in the morning, I would get up and I would always have something to write on near my bed. And I love that part.
I think for me, my favorite part comes right after my least favorite part, which my least favorite part is outlining, which I have learned that I have to do after a string of like 30 pages of like really fun dialogue that I thought was gonna be a full length play, but I've run out of conflict and character development and plot. And so I try to be disciplined and like will not allow myself to start writing dialogue until I've written at least some kind of outline. Some are very detailed, some are loose sketch, but like I need to know the ending, I've learned for myself. And I need to know sort of where things go, or else I just sort of peter out in the middle. And it's kind of nice. It's like, you know, it's like I've done my homework, I've eaten my vegetables, and I have this framework, and then I can do the fun thing, which is, you know, writing fights and writing jokes and things like that. So then it's like I can play.
I think beyond the moment when everything is possible, right, and the perfect Tony-winning play is just right out of reach, I think when you get actors in the room for the first time, I think that's my favorite time, because for so long you spend your time staring at a computer screen and thinking about what this might sound like or what the rhythm is or how the dialogue works or you know, whose scene it is and what the conflict is, and you think about all of these things and it's all in your head. And then that moment when it belongs to another group of people is really profound. And I think that's the reason why I will just continue to write theater forever and ever, because it doesn't stop with me. And the artists who come into the room as actors and director, designers, all of that, bring so much into the equation that I never even thought of. And so just getting the ideas that you've been wrestling with for a long time into the thoughts and feelings of another group of collaborators is really pretty extraordinary.
Jennifer, what a helpful segue, because my next question involves taking it from the writing process where you're alone in a room at your writing space and taking it into a rehearsal space with actors, director. And so I'm in sort of giving our audience a little bit more of an insight into what that process is like. I want to put it to the group about what is the most helpful thing about taking it to a room with actors and getting the insights that you get from a cast. And then from an audience, if it's in front of an audience, if it's a public reading, rather than just in a rehearsal room. For you as a writer, what is the most helpful element of that time when you're taking it to a team for the first time?
there's a gap in communicating meaning, and it's always there. So when you're talking to another person, that person, as much as you want that person to be able to crawl around inside your brain and see how it really works, you can't do that. So language is imperfect, and when you sort of explore those gaps and those connections with another group of people, it's really exhilarating. And I think what happens is that all of a sudden these things that you have been wrestling with for so long, you realize that they are important and they are significant. It's very easy to kind of talk yourself out of stuff when you're in the room by yourself and say, oh, this isn't important. I'm the only one who thinks this is interesting. And then you get into a room and all of a sudden people are bringing their own experiences into the conversation, say, oh yeah, I had an experience like that, or I know what you're going for here, or this is what this does for me, where you're just like, oh my gosh, so I'm not alone, right? And that's a truly marvelous, marvelous feeling.
Or I read this line this way, yes. This is what I interpret it to be.
And it's better than I ever thought it would be that way, right? You get it in the hands of really good actors, which I am not one, and it's like there's life there that you didn't even know existed.
Yeah, I think you touched on it when you said communication, because I think when you get in the room with actors for the first time is when you find out whether you've said what you thought you said. Mm-hmm. There are two kinds of feedback. One is constructive criticism, which is somebody says, I like the plot, these characters didn't work for me for reasons X, Y, and Z. But before you even get to that point, you have to figure out whether you're on the same page with the audience, whether what you think you've said is actually what they're receiving. And the first step of that is working with actors, and the next step is sharing it with an audience.
I think for me, the way that actors can transform a character or fully realize what you were going for, because, for example, the script that tomorrow, I hope you all are going to watch, I sent it to a lot of my friends before I ever had actors read it, and they all had good things to say, but something that came up a couple of times was that there was this one character, and people talked about her, and they just said that she was unsympathetic, and that by the time something happens later, they were like, I already didn't like her, so I didn't care. And I was like, okay, that's good to know. So then at the workshop, I had that talk back. We were allowed to help tailor the questions, so I kind of posed a question about how they perceive that character, and nobody said that because there was an actual human person bringing life to it, and they did empathize with her because they got to see her face, and they didn't just read these words that may have been mean on pages because they got to see how she performed it. And I think that, I mean, that's what I always had in mind, but you can't distill that unless there's an actor doing it. So I think that is really valuable.
Yeah, I very much agree. You know, I think it's also, I love working with actors, even for a short period of time like this or for an extended period of time, because I was talking about this yesterday where, you know, my last full-length play had 9 characters and 9 actors. And, you know, I wrote it. You know, theoretically I should be the expert on them, but there are 9 of them and 1 of me, and it's so special where you get one actor playing one role who lives in that character and thinks, frankly, more deeply about that one particular character than I ever did, because I was juggling, you know, 9 people and sets, you know, and things like that. And so it can be, you know, so illuminating. And
that individualized perspective,
right,
really helps.
Yeah, the fact that, yeah, and it's also just, it's so humbling and, you know, amazing to see someone who, like, you know, cares enough to think that deeply about something you created, just in any sense. And yeah, and again, you really get a sense of when things work. We just had a moment, we started rehearsals for my play this afternoon, and we were talking about how there's one character, and I was like, you know, intellectually, after I wrote it and before I heard it out loud, I was like, my brain is telling me logically, because of the kind of person he is, that I should go back and rewrite him to be a different way. And this was after we had read through it once, and even today they were all like, don't you dare. And so it was like, you know, and so it was one of those, and I was like, yes, like that's what this has reinforced to me, is that it works so much, you know, these are the kinds of things you don't see as just like words on a piece of paper.
Yes, 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 and yes. I'm an actor and a director, so I think they're really cool people.
But there's always something new that an actor, that an actor or director would bring to a reading, to a character that you think you know everything about. Ben Ishmael, wonderful, wonderful friend, directed my play last night, and at the very end, he created a moment that I just loved, that I never thought, and he created that moment, which I so loved and was so perfect. One of the actors yesterday, she's reading some of the text, and I heard something, and I said, that didn't sound right. And I said, and I paused a second, I said, can we change, because the line is, if it is God's wish. And I said, could you change that to will? And she says, oh yes, of course, God doesn't wish, God wills. And I thought, oh yeah, that's right, because I heard her say it, and I thought, no, it's wrong. Something was, just because I've been reading that all the time, but when she said it, I knew it was wrong. It just didn't sound right. So that's one of the greatest things of hearing actors, those spiritual, creative, talented beings, say your words and put it together. And sometimes you think, I wrote a pause there, but no, there's no pause there. I don't need a pause there, right? No, there's no need. And the actor would just go right past the pause, and the pause may happen two lines later. But I thought there was a pause there, but no, it doesn't need a pause there. So I just love hearing the words and hearing these trained, wonderful, creative, spiritual people put my words into their heart and minds, and it just sounds sometimes better.
And so most of what we're focusing on now is the act of reading, just the simple reading, you know, no props, no costumes, no nothing. It's up to your imaginations as an audience to paint the pictures that the writers have described. And so if the development is happy, lucky enough to go on to the next stage where it is given a team of designers, and then you're able to start to figure out, what does the world of this play look like? And oh my gosh, I did not write enough time for this costume change that has to happen in this moment here. Other discoveries start to happen. The next layer of discoveries start to happen once you can take it into a workshop or production setting. Has anyone had any major discoveries that came up in that sort of realm?
So I wrote a play. I love this story because the entire room just erupted in laughter. But I wrote this, it was a very serious play, and it took place in an interrogation room. And the main character was being interrogated, and there were flashback scenes, right? So it would go, you know, 5 years earlier, 3 years earlier, that kind of thing. And so she was in the room and she was being interrogated. And then there was a flashback, and the flashback scene that I had written was the first scene where in a military situation she had gotten her gun. And so it was all about having to sign the permission card and all of this, and here's your training, here's your ammunition and all of this. And so at the end of this beautiful flashback scene, she had a gun in her hand, and the lights changed, and she was back in the interrogation room.
Oh no.
I'm in the back of the house, and I'm just like, okay, just shoot her and then escape. So yes, I mean, in my head, I had spent so much time with the play, and the gun had just disappeared and it wasn't there anymore.
It wasn't a problem.
I know, and then all of a sudden there it was, and I was like, oh yeah, I gotta fix that.
totally agree. There's always, again, you think you know everything about your play, maybe for about 5 minutes, and then he quits in someone's hands, which to me is the fun of it. I've learned in being in playwriting Facebook groups and things that there are playwrights who want it exactly as it's in their head and will freak out if it's not. And for me, the fun is, you know, theoretically, hopefully, I get to see several different theater companies do it, and the fact that from the same document, three very, very different things come about is the fun of it for me, honestly. And I had a couple similar things, both with costumes. So my last play, the one with the nine characters that I talked about, was produced first actually in Orlando. And I had written, and it was just it was basically, I needed an excuse for a character to be outside. The play took place in Delaware. And so the character was like, oh, I was outside shoveling snow and I saw so-and-so. And the director from the Orlando production called me and was like, so could they be like mowing grass? Because like our actors don't have like snow appropriate coats.
And also as a director, I then have to track where everyone takes off their coat and puts on their coat. And I was like, oh yeah, they're mowing grass, that's fine. Yeah, that's totally fine. And then again, that same play had a production up in DC.
Did you change it from like winter to summer in the timeline?
Yeah, I mean, because the whole point of it was that it all took place at once. Yeah, I mean, we never went outside. Like, nothing outside had nothing to do with it. So the time didn't matter. I probably wrote it during the winter or whatever. So I was thinking that. And so, and then I came to DC, and there was a really funny moment where the costume designer, who I knew personally, at one point she just looked at me and she's like, why does every scene have to be a different day? So like each of these people need to have 12 different outfits. And so I was like, oh, right, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's something to think about.
Now that we've talked a little bit about sort of going through the process of development and what kind of discoveries can arise, I want to shift a little bit and talk about the world of playwriting. As a director, I know that you know you can sort of exist in a vacuum until you get into a room and get a project going on. So as writers, it's a lonely world out there, I know. And it takes a lot of effort to get your work out there and to get it produced and get it read and get it recognized. And so that's part of what this festival does, is offers people opportunity to be seen and be heard and have their work be received by an audience. And so I want to turn a little bit and talk a little bit about what's going on in the greater world. Sunday at 12 o'clock, there is a panel between Artistic Director Stephanie Gillard and Nan Barnett, the illustrious Executive Director of the National New Play Network, who's in the audience with us tonight. We'll be talking about what's going on in the scene across the country. So with that in mind, knowing that you're going to hear more about that, I want to bring up a trend that has been sort of happening in theater, and that's called issue plays. And when I say issue plays, we're talking about plays that are focused more on something that is a social or political issue. And not that this hasn't ever happened in the history of theater, but it's a very prevalent thing right now. And so I put it to our playwright panel here, particularly Ms. Taylor with her play U2, about what's your take on that trend about issue plays and how do you approach that or not approach that?
So as someone whose play would probably be designated as an issue play, I take issue with that. I've been thinking about that since yesterday when she sent those questions. But I think that, although I understand where the impetus comes from, I think that what some people would describe as an issue play, other people would just describe as a play about their lives, and that may have a social or political issue in it because that's just what their lives are like. And I think that, I don't know if I would say, and this is just me, I work in theater, but I don't know a lot, just a little bit, but I don't know that I would say that I think the trend is so much for issue plays as much as I think that there is a trend for a lot of theaters to finally produce plays by people from marginalized groups. And when you're producing plays by women of all races, men of color, LGBT people, et cetera, who are writing about their own lives, there might be some issues in it because of the lives that they're experiencing. And then maybe other people are seeing that and going, oh, this is what's hot right now. And then they're writing an issue play. And I'm sure that not everyone will agree with that, but that's how I feel. So I think that it's what some would describe as an issue play, others would say is just a play about something that happened.
I think that the theater in particular allows us a chance to look at the complexity of the human experience in a way that is immediate and engaged. And so, again, to kind of reiterate what Taylor just said, that because because plays deal with humans in very human situations, right? I think that there are issues that humans have that are, you know, well suited for the theater. And I think that just because we are in a space together and we are engaged with each other, that allows us to look at issues that in the public sphere might be might be characterized as black and white or right or wrong or here's what we should do or here's what we should be doing. And once you actually put the human being into the equation, you realize that there's so much that goes into a person's experience that can't be described as a binary, right? And so that, I think, is why theater, that's what theater does so incredibly well. And I think that's why, as Taylor just said, we have now, I think, an environment where all kinds of storytellers are being celebrated. And so because of that, these concerns, questions are coming to the forefront in a way that they haven't been before.
I agree with all of that. I also think that trends are something that are interesting and important from an audience perspective and from an artistic director perspective. But I think it can be hazardous as a writer to worry about them too much, because if you're trying to develop something with the expectation that it will fit a trend, that the trend may change by the time it's ready to be produced. And I don't want to overstate that. If somebody commissions you to do something because it fits a season, that's wonderful. But if there's no guarantee that my work is going to see the light of day, I want to do the one thing that I most want to do in the world, because that's going to come out the best.
Thank you for commenting on that, because I think it's an interesting thing to know whether or not as a writer you ever feel influenced. And that sort of leads me to my next question, which is about other writers and other people who inspire you, or other writers that you love to come back to that have been a touchstone for you. And that could be any kind of writer, really. Does anyone want to touch on that?
I will. Briefly, I will say that actually, although my play has nothing to do with this style of writing, but over the summer I worked at American Shakespeare Center Theater Camp, and the way that it inspired me was that I got rid of almost all of my stage directions, because Shakespeare didn't have any, because they didn't have directors. So the actors just got to do their own thing. So that, I think that like thinking about, that made me think about the ways, what the opportunities I was giving a director. And I think because I came in through an actor, and as an actor, and then I directed a little bit, trying to give them as much freedom as possible. So that came from Shakespeare. And then also I will say, and I talk about this all the time, but the person who inspires me the most is actually not a like professionally produced playwright. It's my friend, Micah Ariel Watson, who is currently getting her MFA in dramatic writing at NYU. And I've known her for the past 4 years, and she is an amazing writer. And she actually, reading her plays made me go, oh, I can do that too. And she writes now for the screen and for the stage. And I think that seeing a young woman do what she does has just inspired me to keep going back to that.
I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to, and it's funny talking about trends, because I don't think there's any way to, it takes so long to develop a story, to write a story, that if it doesn't come from a place of real interest and sort of devotion to you as an artist, it's not gonna have the weight that it needs to. And I had the opportunity to work with a novel by Margaret Atwood. So I have an adaptation of Atwood's novel, Alias Grace, for the stage. And I actually started working on this project 10 years ago. And what's really wild that we just couldn't anticipate when we started down the road, my producing partner and I, he actually secured the rights for me to adapt the novel. And it was well before Atwood was having this renaissance that she's having now. I mean, The Handmaid's Tale is now a television series, and sadly the book is also more relevant than it was, I think, when it was written. And then Alias Grace as well was also done as a Netflix series, and there's just this sort of interesting sort of coalescing around Margaret Atwood's books. And so we had a wonderful sort of timing thing occur when the play had been workshopped and it was ready for its world premiere. It premiered in Chicago a week before the Netflix series actually dropped. And
ooh,
so it, but there's no way that could have been predicted when we started down the road. And so I think there's a really interesting sort of a zeitgeist, if you will, about things that are sort of floating around in culture, or questions that we have or ideas that we may have as a society that get reflected through the storytelling. And I think the good writers like Margaret Atwood, who's a huge inspiration to me, are able to sort of see into the future a little bit, I think, and see what those are going to be. So definitely Atwood. I'm also a huge fan of Tony Kushner. Angels in America is one of my favorite plays ever. Carol Churchill is another one. I love these writers who, you know, use the theater to do huge epic things, because that's what we need as people, I think. So that's where I find a lot of inspiration.
I was introduced to my favorite playwright at my second year at Juilliard. I was cast in Busman and Lena, and it was a play by Athol Fugard. And that opened up my heart and my mind like nothing else. And of course, Shakespeare, yes, I've acted in 22 of his plays, I've directed six, maybe eight of his plays, but Athol Fugard's plays really resonated with me as a young actor. And I think that stuck with me over the years. And I think I may have mentioned it last night that the way he writes, the rhythm, his style, and sometimes you're reading his work or you're acting in his work or you're working on producing his work, and you think, what is happening here? It's just people talking. It's just Hallie comes, you know, Sam and Willie are just dancing. There's a ballroom contest and they're getting ready to do a ballroom dance, and they're studying and they're working, and Willie is talking about Hilda and the fight that they're having, and it's like two guys just talking until Hallie comes in, and then things start to change, and then Hallie's dad comes home, and then things start to change, and then the storm happens. But right then and there, it was a sunny day, suddenly turned into a stormy day. And I love when that happens. And all of his work has that element to it. Dominique Morisseau is also one of my favorite writers. You will see in my work, if you read it, there are lots of ellipses, and I don't know how to use them as well as she does. I'm learning how to use them. But I always think that there's some undercurrent thought, and some things we don't say, and some things we say that we wish we could take back. I like to think of that, and that's what Dominique does. So those are my two inspirations, and Shakespeare, of course, is my ultimate inspiration.
Obviously, so many of the playwrights already mentioned here have been huge inspirations, and again, for me, I feel like I'm catching up because I didn't have coursework, so I'm still enjoying reading. I found so many of the authors I love through the New Play Exchange. I read so many plays on there, which has been amazing. So I found so many amazing writers there who I've since become friends with, you know, through social media and things like that, which, again, as we were saying, you know, playwriting can be awfully lonely, and so it's been great to connect with people. I'll also say, so this past summer, I was lucky enough to be chosen to go to my first ever writer's retreat / like workshop with Lambda Literary out in LA. And so if you don't know Lambda Literary, it's a for LGBTQ plus writers, and it was just amazing to be in a room. You know, again, there were people, one person had just graduated college, or just graduated high school, sorry, it was on a gap year before college. Whereas, there were people in the room who were in there, probably 50s or 60s. And so, and just so inspired by, and I think, you know, a lot of these names you're gonna start seeing, which is great. Our instructor, Mufunisu Adolfio, she's in New York, and she's in the, I think, halfway through her nine play cycle based on her Nigerian and Nigerian American family, and just an amazing instructor. It was very funny because there were different cohorts for, you know, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and you know, they were always like, are the playwrights crying again? But it was an amazing week. And so, and I think it was so interesting because I love so many of sort of the previous generations of queer writers, but it's also very exciting because I think we're getting a lot of you're going to see a lot of new work and different perspectives from the community. So, you know, in that room, there were trans men, there were non-binary writers, there were, again, people of all races and ages. And so just really excited and now watching them. Again, we started, we do Google Hangouts once a month now because we had such a good time in the room and we still read each other's work and comment on it. And just watching them, you know, who's having a production in London, who's announcing a new play here and there, who just, you know, won theater conspiracies, you know, contests and things like that. So yeah, it's just really exciting. And it's really nice because it's, I feel at least in I've been lucky enough to be in a lot of playwriting communities where people are genuinely happy for each other, which I think, you know, again, because it's, you know, I mean, it, you know, it is a competition in a lot of respects as well. And so just to meet so many people who are rooting for each other is really great.
Yeah. Kyle, any word from you on your favorite influential writers?
This question always embarrasses me because when I read a fair number of plays, and when I read plays, I rarely enjoy them because I'm thinking about the technique and thinking how I might borrow a certain technique.
Thank you.
When I go to plays, I don't think analytically. I have a more emotional reaction, but I'm focusing on the actors. And I don't think about, if it's a good play, I don't think about the words on the page at all. So my inspiration doesn't come from writers per se, even though it's their work behind the inspiration.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for giving us a little bit of insight into your world as a writer. It's really, really just great to know how you operate. Can we thank our playwrights one more time?
Thank you all so much for joining us today. We are so excited about our emerging play programs. You can learn more about the Play Festival and the National New Play Exchange in our next episode. And as always, we want to hear from you. Which new play really resonated with you from the festival? You can email us at podcast@americanstage.org or like our Facebook page to join in on the conversation.
Thank you for joining Spotlight, the American Stage podcast. For more American Stage programs and news, visit americanstage.org.